The following is rated not safe for work. It contains strong language, adult situations, and lots of spoilers. Discretion is advised.
In the criminal justice system, cinematic-based offenses are considered especially heinous. The dedicated attorneys who investigate these villainous films are members of an elite squad known as the Reels of Justice. These are their stories.
Order, please, order. The Reels of Justice is now in session. Judge Big Ben Hasslard presiding. We all rise for the Honorable Judge Hasslard.
Be seated. Welcome to the season premiere of Reels of Justice.
Yeah! Yeah. Season 3!
Today we are hearing the case of Death of the Nile. Death on the Nile, 1978. I'm already off to a great start in the season premiere. Versus Death on the Nile, 2022. Both based on the 1937 Agatha Christie novel of the same name, they each follow the exploits of famed detective Hercule Poirot as he tries to unravel the mystery surrounding a murdered heiress on her honeymoon. For those of you unfamiliar with our court proceedings, in civil cases like this, the counsel is appointed to represent each film, and each will present a case as to why their client is the superior movie. And ultimately, the jury will render its verdict as to which is the better film. This decision will hereby stand in all rankings and listicles from now on until the end of time, ad infinitum. Mr. Dylan J. Schlender, you are appearing on behalf of Death of the Nile, 1978. You may present your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, today there's a case that only I, Dylan J. Schlender, the greatest lawyer in Reels of Justice, can handle. You see, we have Death on the Nile versus Death on the Nile. Mon Dieu, are we seeing double? No. We are seeing an elaborate copy, a facsimile meant to distract us from a crime. This is what Kenneth Branagh does. Under the guise of revering the classics, he peacocks about with his outrageous mustaches and delivers a product that is neither faithful to the book or the movie that came before it. Such as it is, though, it is not a bad offering. It is just wholly extraneous, even as a sequel to his take on Murder on the Orient Express. So out of respect to my learned colleague who literally wrote the book on Poirot, I will say that both movies and the book Death on the Nile have more merit outside of their base commercial appeal, and we'll talk about that in the case. But when we get to the rankings, Death on the Nile 78 comes out on top. So we will look broadly at entertainment value, commentary, and construction. And I think on all three of these points, the jury will agree. We can say Death on the Nile 78 is the winner. Case dismissed.
Only the greatest lawyer can dismiss cases, and I'm sorry, that is not you.
Oh, it's Ryan.
It's Ryan.
He's got a better mustache.
It's true.
Representing Death on the Nile 2022 is Professor Jeremy Black. Please present your opening statement.
Well, thank you very much for asking me to speak on this one. What I'd like to do is agree in many respects with the learned counsel we've just heard. They are both interesting films. They're based on a novel which neither of them faithfully represents. And I think one can actually say that from that point of view, you can either be irritated with both of them, or you can say there's a degree of authorial freedom, screenwriting that one can allow. I'm going to argue that the 1978 one is a good film. I'm just going to say why I prefer the Kenneth Branagh one, but preferences are personal, and obviously members of the jury will decide what they regard as the appropriate outcome. And whatever it is, we should all accept it.
On the listicle.
As fact.
Right. I'm going to go on record. I'm going to contest it if I lose. I'm going to make a huge stink.
That's true.
Well, we look forward to that, but give it your best shot, Mr. Schlender. What's your first exhibit?
Well, thank you, Judge. So let's start looking at Hercule Poirot himself, because he's a highly, highly entertaining character. He's an immigrant from Belgium, and he's integrated himself into high English society. So we find him to be a quirky, though thoroughly cosmopolitan character. His charm is largely derived from his mannerisms and the friction it causes when he comes up against folks that he seems to be just slightly out of step with, right? Like, he's a gentleman, but not in the kind of same way that, like, Colonel Race is, you know? He's always a bit of a degree removed. So though he's kind of can come across as cartoonish, he is a man of intense morals and, like, psychological understanding, right? As a literary character, we see him walk this tightrope of comedy and morality quite well. So when we take that from the novels, of which there are many, and we look at him in these two movies, we see in 78 that we have the established, fearless Poirot. He's in search of evil, determined to solve the case, to pursue justice. In 78, he is a rock, and he is highly entertaining still, whether it's when he emerges from the bar to confront the doctor, like he was just down there the whole time, or when he asked the young daughter to dance instead of her mother, you know. So we contrast that to the 2022 version, and I think we see Poirot stripped down a bit more. We're given glimpses into his past, and it's a violent past, right? He suffered the wounds of war. The war claimed his only love, and, you know, so obviously this must have such passion that would burn deep inside him. But I think when we get that exposure to Poirot, it blunts him as this avatar or edifice of pure justice. I think when you read the novels, Poirot is larger than just a normal man's backstory, right? He is more what Batman is to for the kids out there than what Bruce Wayne is. So if you think of, yes, think about how people, because we get to see behind the scenes in the DC movies, right? We know Bruce Wayne is Batman, but to the folks on the street, Batman said,
"Do you is that really so?"
I know. Yeah, the billionaire.
I thought no Batman way. Was real. You're upsetting me now.
I'm sorry, but my point is so. And Poirot is a lot kind of like that superhero model, where the people looking at him, they could see this avatar of pure justice. And I think that is one of his strengths. And not only in the 78 movie does he get to be that rock, we get to see it in the novels a lot as well. And also, I would just like to throw this out there, just kind of as a funny point. The mustaches. Kenneth Branagh's version, they say he got scarred, so he grew the mustaches. But we know this isn't true, because in one of the first Poirot novels, The Big Four, he actually shaves his mustaches off.
What?
This is true, but you're going to love this, Judge. He shaves his mustaches off so he could claim that he's his twin brother, who doesn't actually exist. But he disguises himself as his twin brother by putting fake mustaches on.
Oh, I want to see Kenneth Branagh like make that the third movie.
Yeah, they should make The Big Four into a movie. It would be great. It would be a James Bond movie only with Hercule Poirot. But the point is, he says he gave himself a scar to add to the illusion. So Poirot wears mustaches because they're fancy and he likes them, not because he suffered war wounds, I would say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Slender. I'd like to pass that on to the opposing counsel. Which Hercule Poirot do you think is, does the 2022 version surpass the 78 version?
Okay. Let me say, I agree with my predecessor that we should have a, you know, discuss the characterization. What I would like to do now is first talk about Poirot, and then as a separate characterization, talk about the others. Now, as far as Poirot is concerned, in judging between the two films, I think I would say, and remember, we did discuss Murder on the Orient Express, that neither, in my mind, neither Ustinov, who indeed I once met and spoke to, incidentally, neither Ustinov nor Branagh is as good as Albert Finney in the earlier Murder on the Orient Express. And I think Albert Finney is the best of the filmic Poirots. But if we're looking then at two actors who are both distinguished actors, they're both good actors, if we're looking them A, as actors, and B, as Hercule Poirot, which is not quite the same thing, let me say that Ustinov plays it more for laughs. I think, you know, you might find that witty. I think part of the wit dates a bit. For example, once you've heard him say once he's a Belgian, not a Frenchman, it gets rather boring to hear him say it. I counted it four times in the film.
I laughed all four times.
Well,
I only laughed three of them.
I thought the interplay between him and David Niven as Race was not, again, and much of which was about language, was rather dated, but I don't think it would even have been terribly funny in 1978. I mean, I, alas, can remember 1978 quite well. And there were aspects of that film which were rather uncomfortable there. I thought the racism of the portrayal of the Indian manager on the boat, and it was a racism which Hercule Poirot is not cast as opposing. I thought that was rather distasteful. Thought it was distasteful at the time. I think it's even more distasteful now. But simply as Poirot, I'm not quite sure that the kind of rather light, and he does play it as essentially a light role, I'm not quite sure that the light role he plays is as well suited as Branagh. I think Branagh both carries with it a degree of moral seriousness and also in a way captures possibly what we might expect of a murder story in 2022. I think we're less easy at the idea that murder is comedy. I think we are more concerned with depth of character. I'm not criticizing Ustinov for playing the script as he did, but I am saying that Branagh gets a chance because of the script that is written, and maybe I suspect which he influenced, because he obviously was prominent in that film, at playing a deeper, more interesting, more insightful about people, including about his flaws. You will recall that in the 2022 version, Salome Otterburn and his relationship is much more central. It's played for laughs in the previous film. I think Angela Lansbury, in fact, is very good in the role for which she is scripted. I think she's very good. But I think actually that there is a much better interplay, and an interplay much more, not between equals, because actually I think in the film, the 2022 one, the Salome Otterburn is not just a brilliant actress, and she was seen by many people in Britain as Cleopatra during lockdown, because the National Theatre's version was broadcast for free, so lots of people like me could see it. So she's a great actress, but also, actually, Poirot comes across as not just vulnerable, but also as in some respects a more fragile character. And that fragility is brought out by Salome's niece, who I think is, again, a very good actress. So it's brought out very well with her, you know, criticism of the way he is judgmental. And I think that reads better for us. And I think Branagh plays that interaction well. I think we see him maturing as a character. And indeed, the whole point at the very end with him sitting in the nightclub in a very introspective moment, without his moustache, of course, is surely the idea is that he has come through his earlier need to disguise himself. Now, you might say that that's a rather silly epiphany and that tells you more about your generation than my generation. My generation might be a little more cynical in that respect. But I think the need today to believe that characters have depth, maturity and development is true in pretty well all films. And I think Branagh plays that very well in this particular film. I think Ustinov plays it for laughs. It's amusing. It's light. There aren't very many moments of his appearance before the camera that I think you will remember.
Right. I want to jump back in here because I disagree with so much of that. I don't think Poirot as a character needs this kind of depth. I don't think he needs this kind of backstory. I don't think he needs this kind of vulnerability. I think we can look at other characters in either in literary history, or we can make up new characters that can explore some of these things that are better equipped to explore them than Poirot, because Poirot, he's about fighting evil. He's about justice. He is a very monolithic character. I don't think showing him having this vulnerable past serves him. If anything, I think it dilutes him. I don't think we need to see him as vulnerable. I think where you say Ustinov was playing it for laughs, he wasn't playing it for laughs. He was playing from a position of strength. He was in many ways a righteous character. And one of the things I would say about this Brana interpretation as well is when we run this danger, when we put the modern lens on unmodern characters, and Poirot is thoroughly unmodern. Even in some of the books, they mention how he's a throwback. It's kind of funny. You're reading a book written in 1940, and it's like, he's a throwback, you know? And
time is fluid.
Yes, exactly. And when you look at some of those modern issues that are brought up in the 2022 version, you know, like some of that interracial interplay, and then you talk about in the 78 version the racist interpretation of the Indian workers, even though this is taking place in 37, and I think that was a strength to have that kind of racism in there, and maybe Poirot be blind to it, is a strength of the commentary of the 78 episode. It's like we look at it now and we're like, oh man, that's bad, but in 37 that's how it would have played out. So if
I remind you, Apu hasn't been invented yet at that point.
Yeah, well, that's true. And so I'm not condoning it, but we're by not ignoring it, we're able to address it better than in a way when in the 2022 version is kind of manipulating modern day feelings and trying to cram them in to 1937 in a way that I didn't think was believable. I don't think Poirot would. I think Poirot wouldn't be a racist person himself at all. Don't get me wrong. He's just too wedded to the idea of justice, you know, but this idea of him having flirtations with the, I don't think it helps his character. I don't think it serves his character. And I don't think all characters need to grow. I don't think we always need to have these modern reimaginations. You know, it's like it going back to like the superhero motif, right? It's like, what if Superman was evil? You know, it's like, how many times can we write Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns? You know, how many times can we write Kingdom Come? These are all comic books, Jeremy. I'll send you links later.
Jeremy knows comic books.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
He knows Batman is Bruce Wayne, at least.
Yeah, well, now he does. But that's my point is, Poirot doesn't need this kind of treatment. I think it dilutes the message and commentary that Christie was establishing with him. Basically, from day one, the mysterious affairs at Styles, when Hastings was commenting on him, all the way through, you know, Poirot has a role in literary history that you know better than anyone, Jeremy, and that's how I know because I read your book. And I think that the 2022 version understands that, but tries to manipulate it to different ends that don't quite work, you know, and understandably so, because no one really cares about interwar commentary the way Agatha Christie did now. It's hard to make a movie. It's like, hey, we're going to show like how in the interwar period, how a Belgian immigrant working in London society is actually a huge deal, because it was a big deal. And but like, it's hard to get someone in 2020 to realize that, because, you know, World War II still happens and things like that.
I'd like to move on from Hercule Poirot, though. We've spent quite a bit of time on it.
No, that's fine. And we're kind of bleeding into some of the commentary points that I want to make anyway.
Okay. Would you like to put a nail and hammer that commentary home?
Sure. So I already mentioned some of that about Brana, like, flippantly appeals to racial tensions in a way that's easy for us to swallow in 2022, but does seem out of place in interwar Egypt. And there's also the issues of class, which is very important, not only in the novels, but we also see these in the 78 version, in the 2022 version. And one of the things that both movies have in common is Simon and Jackie's contempt for Lynette's wealth. Lynette being American is very, very important in the novel, because she doesn't understand like British polity, right? Like living in polite society. And we see that in the 78 movie when the butler comes up, is like, would you like to meet the staff? And she goes, there'll be time for that later. I mean, how gauche, simply gauche.
So gauche.
Very gauche. And you don't get that because if I don't think Gal Gadot can play American. She's just very exotically beautiful. She has an accent. So if she was supposed to be American in the 2022 version, I don't think it played. And that class distinction was a very important thing that Christie addresses in a lot of her novels. And it's an important thing that Poirot deals with, but it's never really brought up to the forefront. It's something you kind of always see in the background, right? So Jeremy was just saying, like, the racism of the Indian workers. It's like, well, no, that's just how the class stratas and everything work then. And trying to shoehorn that into 2022 when you have the woman talking about like being a socialist and like, oh, she should be one of the first in the firing line, you know, like Aerosmith said, eat the rich, you know, but that doesn't capture those tensions. I think he was shooting for trying to maybe capture those class tensions that we might see today, but it's wholly ineffective because it's still just a bunch of rich people. It doesn't have that same kind of strata tension that we see in the novel and in the 78 movie. I'll let Jeremy
pass it on to Professor Black. Yes,
I'll talk more
Jeremy,
about
not too. Professor Black. I mean, you
know. Jeremy.
I know I don't like the name, but it's the one I've got. Okay.
Me neither.
I thought in this one, I would try and look at the other characters. And I think there are strengths and weaknesses in both of the films. The principal weakness in the film I'm supposed to be talking about is, I think, the Book character played by Tom Bateman. Which is not really a role that's valid, I think, is a fair comment. I think it doesn't really help in that film. I'm not criticizing Bateman's playing of it, because again, he's obviously scripted. You could say that the counterpart is the David Niven of Colonel Race. Race is in the film, is in the novel, but again, is not a major player. And you suspect there that they've written it extensively in order to find something for David Niven to do to justify his salary to bring in the people. So I don't think either of those work terribly well. What I did like is I thought Emma Mackay as Jackie was very good in the second film. I thought better than Mia Farrow. I think she conveyed a sexuality. In fact, I think that, it's interesting, you know, and I'm not, you know, as a historian, I'm in this difficult water here because I don't think films should necessarily be, they can't be the same as novels because of the way in which you can or can't get into characters so readily. But I think there is a sexuality in the 2022 film that is only parodied in the 1978 film with essentially Angela Lansbury as the sex character in the sex worker, you could say, in the 1978 one.
There's the quote.
I want to be a sex character someday.
One day.
I think you can see those characters in 2022 as bound up in this sexual tension. And I think that works. They contribute to it, and that aspect of the plot contributes to them. And could I link with that, and then I'll shut up, something that I think is really important in the 2022 film. The 1978 one begins well with that scene of the boat, the ship I should say, on the water and the music that goes with it. That's good. But the 2022 one is suffused with music. And I think the tone of the film is set in the second of the prequels. The first of the prequels is the World War I prequel, which really establishes Poirot. The second of the prequels, which is, I think, an amazing piece of filmic action, and particularly sexual action, is the one in the nightclub. And if anything, I think it's a very long scene in the nightclub, is what carries and establishes the film. And if you contrast it with the 1978 one, the characters in the 1978 one are asked to express their sexuality by looking at each other in a lingering fashion outside a house, and then by riding hard across a bit of Egypt, where in fact they would obviously have had their horses break their legs on the amount of rubble.
That's what I'm doing wrong.
That's what you're doing wrong. But I think that
that's the way it should be. That's old-fashioned courting. None of this sexy dancing that Montabonks like Jeremy Black are promoting over here.
Come on. Well,
there we are. I would probably be thrown out of the Republican National Convention for those remarks. Or on the other hand, I might get invited to some of those parties that young
Congress
seem to be getting invited to. So there you are.
What when God closes a door, he opens a window, right? It's.
I mean, but I think that the other characters, as I said, there are one or two good ones in 78, and I did like Angela Lansbury. Maggie Smith was given some good put-downs, but she always uses her put-downs well. I actually did, I mean, for me, the best of the actors in both films is Sophie Okonedo. I think she's just fantastic. And I think the ability to have her play a major role and not to constrain her. And if you think about it, those of you who know the television series will know that Salome Otterburn, as indeed in the novels, is a comic character. But Sophie Okonedo gives her, you know, she does her comic lines well, but she also gives a much greater resonance to the character, which I liked. I mean, I fully accept that for those who don't want, I mean, as you probably know, the film has had a lot of criticism, a lot of hostile criticism, I should say, in part on the argument that it's modern and wokish in its approach to race and sex. I don't think anybody would accuse me of being wokish. I myself think it works very well as a film under both heads. So that's what I would say on that point.
You're slowly getting woker and woker, Jeremy.
promoting sex parties, lascivious dancing.
Batman.
It's a season premiere, man.
That's true. We're pulling out all the stuff.
You're hanging out with too many of those young guys now.
it's gotta
you have
be
a rebuttal, Mr. Slender?
Well, so it kind of dovetails into my last point. So I'll just mention real quick about the acting score. I do think both casts are very strong. I do, one thing I'll give Kenneth Branagh a bit of credit for is frequently in the novels, Perrault is described as murmuring. He'll murmur a lot and so he'll say stuff under his breath. And I think Branagh was able to capture that in a way that probably has more to do with modern microphone technology than, like, if Ustinov was murmuring, you wouldn't be able to hear anything. So I do appreciate that. And I gotta say, though, I think Angela Lansbury was very, very strong as the quote-unquote sex character, and she was pretty faithful to a character that was in the book as well. I think one of the things that the 2022 version suffered from was trying to combine too many composite characters, and I agree with Jeremy, book being one of the weaker of the two, with him witnessing the murder. I know he ties in Murder at the Orient Express, and that's why it was there, so I also don't believe that Poirot would have taken a case of being a PI investigating book in his potential love life. That doesn't seem like something Poirot
you don't believe in side hustles
would do. Not Poirot. He has enough money to satisfy his needs and caprices. Okay. So that kind of does go into my last point, because I think Jeremy described brilliantly the opening, because actually, for all my making fun of the sexy dancing, you know, that opening is a little more faithful to the novel. But he left out the most important scene, and just like Hercule Poirot, I saved my best point for last. we have to look at the most important scene as far as driving the plot is concerned, and that's the shooting of Simon Doyle by Jackie. In 78, we see a very convincing shot fired that lays Simon out on the couch. It's a nice, long, established shot. I would defer to Ryan to describing what kind of shooting that is. But it wasn't like TV shooting. That was pretty cinematic. Jackie immediately, again, this is 78, throws the gun aside, and the plot is taken off like the aforementioned shot. In 2022, this scene looks very clumsy. It is a very quick cut. Yep. You blink and you miss it. Jackie then, now this is key, mind you, because spoilers here, we all know how this movie ends. She turns the gun on herself. Okay, what was the plan here? Because if no one knocked the gun out, she's just not going to shoot herself. She's just going to throw it. But, mon dieu, the gun is grabbed from her hand and then thrown by a third party. What if the girl grabbed the gun and like, oh, I'm going to put that in my pocket so you can't hurt yourself.
Right.
Murder plan ruined.
Well, can I just say, for both films, you know, it's not my job to talk about flaws in the plot, but if any of you are planning a murder, don't do it as they set out to do it. You're dependent on virtually nobody being out on the deck.
Yes.
When, of course, that's when it's supposed to be. You're dependent upon an ability to run along the deck with nobody having their windows open, you know, or being able to look out of them. I mean, the whole plot doesn't work in either version.
Okay.
Is this your next book on how to murder better?
No, and to be fair, though, that both movies do the murder basically the same way it happened. The murder of Lynette. The way it happens in the book.
Yes.
The 78 version does take the time to show Simon taking his shoes off so he's not as loud running down. And like you said, Jeremy, like, don't plan it this way. Well, they did get spotted by the maid, so it's not a perfect plan. In both versions. What I would say, though, the way 2022 edits that scene, it seemingly does not give Simon enough time, right? The way that scene is cut together, it does seem like that would have happened way too fast. Whereas 78, and this is another strength in 78 that I like over 2021, both movies are fairly long, they're over 2 hours, but 78 takes a nice leisurely pace with it. It's kind of like you're reading the novel, you're enjoying the afternoon. Right. You still get all that great commentary and all the depth of field that I had mentioned earlier, but it takes its time. It's a slow place. When the murder happens, you get the beats. But in 2022, it's like rush, 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 rush. They rush the shooting scene. And when it comes to that pacing, the storytelling and the delivering of that believable conclusion, I think we see 78 take the day. And that's where I'll rest my case, Your Honor.
Okay. Can I just add one or two things?
Absolutely.
It's your time now.
Several other things that I would like to comment on the 2022 one. I think the use of light is very good in the 2022 one. I think that's really good. Both the contrast between the light on the Western Front, drained of colour, the light in the nightclub, and the scene outside the nightclub in the street, which again is dark, and the astonishing change with the light in Egypt. I think that's done very well. Again, linked to change, the use of the river, the way in which you move from one river city, London, to almost, if you look at the camera image, then you get the river city in Egypt, then you go back again. That is really very, very good. I think a lot of the individual shots in the 2022 one were really quite excellent. The body, for example, in the paddle wheel, I think that was done really well, really powerful moment. The cutting of the throat and the blood, I thought that was done very, very well. Whereas in contrast, for example, I mean, it's unfortunate, but the blood scenes in the 1978 one were just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Both the blood itself and the blood scene, as it were, where the, you know, so they didn't look
they
like
they did
blood.
The best they could. They were on location. It's very hard to
thickened the paint, for God's sake. I mean, but, you know, it was done, you know. But what I meant was, funnily enough, there was, and I think here, you know, there was more of a contrast between darkness and light in the 2022 version. And I think that was captured in particular in both the two later murders, neither of which I think were done terribly well in the 1978 version. That's just my, I think in the 1978 version, it was a more gradual, pleasant afternoon watch. There wasn't very much darkness in it. And I think there was more darkness in the character. I mean, the interesting point is, you say Well, of course, they did get it wrong because they were seen by the maid. Actually, rubbish. That doesn't matter. She's willing to take a bribe. It is the character fault that leads these two people who are, you know, who we really get into quite interestingly, this manic drive for each other, the extent to which Jackie knows that Simon is really quite dim, but she knows that he depends on her, but she depends on him. She depends on him physically. I thought that is really captured very well and leads them to, do, you know, to, as it were, go and them and do the unnecessary murder, really unnecessary murder. I mean, you might say the whole bloody thing is unnecessary in many senses. I mean, if you want to be realistic to the 1930s, you know, Simon was there and Jackie could have had a relationship with Simon and he would then have got divorced and been set up very nicely as the kind of character in, you know, in one of the characters.
Again, your criminal mastermind is at work here.
Well, and Simon would have controlled
all I'm trying to say is if we move away from the 1930s and compare two different films, we're comparing two different films made at two different moments of film history and in a way for two different markets, so that they've both got quality of that type of film. The 1978 film is being made for the classic market, which seeks to get a large number of members of the family to go along in a sort of ritual Saturday afternoon, let's go and watch the blockbuster. It's got famous stars from the past to appeal to the aged parents. And it's then one which is going to be endlessly put on, in Britain at any rate, on Saturday or Sunday afternoon. It's a very safe film with very formulaic killings, nothing to rock the boat. The 2022 one is obviously not by the standards of modern films terribly, disconcerting. It fits in. But the 2022 one is, I think, more where we are now. That doesn't mean it's better or worse. I prefer it, and I can, as I said, remember 1978 and like quite a few 1970s films. I prefer it because I never saw Peter Ustinov as a very convincing Poirot. I thought Albert Finney was a very good one, and I thought it was a pity they didn't cast Albert Finney again.
Now, your grudge.
Albert Finney was offered the role. He turned it down.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I think it's a pity that lots of people turn down things. It's often a question of offering them a better deal. You know that.
Yeah, of course.
Now, in the case of Branagh, as you will recall, I did not like his Murder on the Orient Express. We did a Reels of Justice. I urge listeners to listen to it. And I argued that that was too dark, too cold, that although it had one or two good shots like the air shots, you know, from above of the carriages, on the whole, it didn't work. This one, I think he has grown better into his account of the role. I'm fully prepared to accept that other people may not like his account of the role, but I think he's better, and I think he's been given a better supporting cast. And that, I think, is very important for the success of it. In essence, Ustinov walked around with a number of other famous people walking around giving cameo roles, some of the cameo roles better than others. I think actually it's tighter, the modern film, more of an interaction between the characters. So I would prefer the 2022 one. And lastly, I've seen the 2022 one twice. It worked in short order. I do my homework, as you can see.
That's why we love you, Jeremy.
It worked even better the second time. I found the nightclub scene even more powerful. I found the music even more powerful. I liked Sophie, you know, Okonodo character even more. And I actually find Branagh, I mean, as it were, maybe it's the further I've got from his Murder on the Orient Express. I've seen the Peter Ustinov one also, I think, three times. It's a perfectly pleasant sort of stroll in the country, as it were. And it gives you a reasonable puzzle on the, you know, obviously we've read the story, but a reasonable puzzle on the main murder. But I think it fails on the other two. And I think it fails on the interaction with David Niven. And I think David Niven's on the screen too often, actually.
And would you like to rest your case on David Niven?
Yes.
Take that, Niven.
Both sides have rested their cases. The attorneys will now present their closing arguments. Mr. Slender, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I've been reading the Perrault novels pretty much nonstop. I've been really enjoying them. I really enjoyed Death on the Nile because I figured out 90% of it, but I couldn't figure out, you know, how he was able to shoot himself. And then, of course, he was able to put another bullet in. I'm like, oh, that's so obvious. The only one I figured out 100% was Sad Cypress. I figured that one out. Anyway, I love the character is what I'm trying to say. And I'm actually really, really happy that Kenneth Branagh has brought him back for modern audiences. And like I said, I rather do like his portrayal. I think the way he's playing Poirot, you could replace him for Usinov, or you could replace him for Finney in the other Murder on the Orient Express. Keep the movies exactly the same, just have his interpretation. I don't think the movies necessarily suffer for it. I think he does a pretty good job. Where I think he loses the thread is his understanding of the character, which if we want to go that route, like exploring his troubled past, I would actually suggest watching the ABC Murders that came out in 2018 starring John Malkovich. That is a darker, more human Poirot.
Yeah,
it is. And again, not really to my taste when it comes to a Poirot offering, but I think he hits it. I think he nails it. What Branagh's going for better there. So when going back to the strengths, we get more of Christie's vision in the 78 version. I think her commentary is not blunted or too manipulated for the modern audience the way we see it in 2022. The way the films are put together, I think we see 78 is much more deliberate and methodical, much like Poirot himself. So in the best tradition of Perrault novels, now that I've laid the case out before you, no verdict is needed because the 2022 film will simply off itself. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slender. I feel cheated for not having received your Hercule Poirot impression. But Jeremy, please present your closing argument.
I did not do the Hercule Poirot impression on the
Thank
whole
you.
Episode. I really have to resist.
Jeremy, you may present your closing argument.
Thank you. Well, most listeners, I assume, will not necessarily have seen both of these. So let me first say that I think it's a good idea when you have two films on the same novel or the same topic. It's a good idea to look at them and to compare them. They're not, on the whole, designed to destroy the other. They are often there in a sort of tribute as much as competition with each other. And I think it's reasonable to say that we're looking here at films that appeared 44 years apart. And it's reasonable to say in films that appear 44 years apart that you would expect differences. I'm in the unusual role for myself of, although I did it with, I think you'll agree with me in The Lady Killers, of saying that I prefer the modern version. And I prefer the modern version not only because I think that the older versions can, despite their skills, despite the quality of the acting, they can creak badly. But also because I think sometimes people in the modern age, they're not just being modish, they're not just being wokish, they're asking serious questions. There is nothing wrong with using Death on the Nile to ask serious questions about interracial relationships. It doesn't actually lessen the murder plot. It doesn't lessen the interest of how the murder was done, or in particular why it was done. If anything, it gives it a greater amplitude to see of different relationships between human beings, which in a sense is what a closed house murder does. And in a sense, that's what you've got on this particular boat. I personally preferred the 2022 one because I think it had an energy. My colleague said it was rushed. Well, I prefer to say I think it had a degree of energy, a tension there. And I think that tension was there from the outset. I think it was there in the two prequels. I think it is interesting to see the protagonist given depth and not just being a slightly frivolous moral actor, which is the Ustinov portrayal. And I found that there was a quality about it and a quality that appealed to all of my senses. I liked the colour and I thought the photography appealed to my visual senses. I had no comment on smell, obviously. I liked the sound and I thought that the frequent amount of music, the use of the music and the quality of it appealed. I liked the variations in the voices of the particular actors, and I thought the interplay of those was good. And I felt at times that although this is obviously not something you could touch, I felt that there was almost a tactile quality about some of the shots. And I felt in particular that there was a tactile quality about the second murder, the cutting of the throat, the blood spatter, what happened to the body. I felt that that was really quite powerful and captured the nature of murder that in a way the other film simply had not done. You know, the other film might have well have given you a better question of where the gun went, but I don't think it really captured the nature of murder. And in fact, the meditation on evil and sin, which is always part of Christie's work. So I would say that for me, the 2022 version is both more moral, more interesting, and paradoxically more entertaining than the 1978 one, which appears stuck in amber like a beautiful jewel from the past, but actually that it is what it is from the past, stuck.
Thank you both. We do need to bring Smell-O-Vision back. Members of the jury, Mr. Rob Maynard, Mr. Big Ben Hassler, and Mr. The Great Ambition of Women is to Inspire, Ryan Luis Rodriguez. You have all heard the facts concerning this case. It is now up to you to determine which of these films is the superior movie. The bailiff will escort you to the deliberation room to render your verdict. My mother was scolding me for investing in a pyramid scheme, but I've never been to Egypt. I just believe in toad skin extract that will save your life.
Oh, my favorite one.
Okay, guys, what are we thinking? Rob, I want to hear from you.
I think we heard a lot of points, and I think both these films have strengths, and I'm kind of trying to pull my Ben Hassler and tally up what it is. I think that if you compare the two Poirots, I do think Kenneth Branagh is the stronger Poirot. I know that Schlenzo was really deep on him being more of a one-dimensional character, but I think he's just as moralistic as he is in the old one, but we know why.
But he cares about the murder too. In the 78 version, I feel like he's just, I solve murders. That's what I do. He doesn't seem to care that someone died.
A puzzle. He just likes to solve puzzles. It seems is like what he is, where he seems more personally invested in saving lives and protecting people.
So I'm with you. I'm Kenneth Branagh is better. Do you agree, Ryan?
No. I don't. Well, first of all, I'm really glad we got the origin story of Poirot's mustache.
It was needed, yes.
I was really
just like Solo, a Star Wars story.
In watching Murder on the Orient Express, I was like, yeah, I'm invested in this murder, but I got to know what's on his face and why is it on there? But I prefer Peter Ustinov. And it's not necessarily like I think he did a particularly great job, even though I love Peter Ustinov, but I found the 2022 version not terribly involving or interesting until Gal Gadot dies, and make of that what you will. I'm not saying that it has anything to do with her per se, but I'm not necessarily sold on her.
You're not saying it.
I like Holly Goodhead as that's her James Bond. That's her Bond girl name. But as the heiress more in the first one.
Yeah, so do I.
While I like 2022 Brana Poirot, then we look at the supporting cast. And to me, 78 takes that all day.
I agree with you, except for Emma Mackey. I think that she is better in the 2022 version.
Okay, so this is
she's the one improvement, I think.
This is the split hairs to me. You've got Emma Mackey, who is both her and Mia Farrow, they're both gorgeous, so I can understand the urge to want to keep them as your side piece or to kill for them. Emma Mackey, to me, gives off evil vibes. Yes, she does. So it kind of spoils the surprise, whereas Mia Farrow doesn't strike me as someone who could kill someone. And that's where I think the reveal that you get in the end is kind of like, oh, Mia Farrow's what? She was so sweet the whole time. Like she doesn't seem deranged. Mackey is following them. She's deranged.
The film does set it up in a way, though.
Clearly you've never met Mia Farrow, because then you know that she's a stone cold killer.
Right.
But I'm just saying that Farrow seems sweeter, and that pulls off more of the surprise to me. At the end with the reveal is like, oh, I didn't expect she'd be the one to have planned this whole thing. But I liked Mackey too. I still think she was a strength there. She's one of the stronger parts of the supporting cast. She's much better than Armie Hammer, who, I mean, I'm
wow,
sure.
Wow, what an achievement.
I'm sure that was a role he could really sink his teeth into.
Oh, boo.
But he was really chewing the scenery, right?
Boo.
Get him all in.
What was the next thing on your list?
Because he's a cannibal. I have a few more jokes I could make, but they're too fresh for
Do they have any meat
Jeremy.
In them? I don't know.
They were okay, but yeah, I thought supporting cast to supporting cast, I thought 78. What did you think of the supporting cast, Ben or Ryan?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, 78 has a sterling cast, outstanding.
It does.
But Emma Mackey, I mean, I had no idea who she was before this,
but I'm
a fan now. I mean, at least I have a new crush.
Yes.
But definitely. Well,
you've needed a new crush for a while.
I have, you know, I've been trying to trade up for a while and I've been trading in a few crushes for this new one.
She's the season's
Karen
Gillan.
I got a few crush miles on it.
We'll
the
see
season premiere crush.
And then I want to talk about the murder. It was brought up in the case. Absolutely. The gunshot scene in 78 is far more convincing. Guarantee. Everything in the 2022 feels fishy. And maybe it's because I watched 78 first, so I knew how it was going. Oh. But it immediately felt fishy.
See, I'm the other way. I watched 2022 first. I kind of knew everything in 78.
Okay, so that's interesting. Okay, so then I will put that strictly to we watched which one first, so I won't put that. But here's one thing about the mystery that I preferred in 78. You met every character and learned their motives to kill before the murder.
Right, yeah.
And then the questioning happening. In 2022, you don't know anything about most of the people on the boat, at least not about why they'd hold a grudge against the heiress. You find that out in the questioning later.
So I don't know about any of them, but it's like progressive, right? You know, like why some of them might kill her.
Right. You know, Jackie,
but the rest.
Yeah. You don't know why the knockoff sister Rosetta
and the
Tharpe
accountant
has a grudge and stuff like that. But did like the music more in 2022 though. Again, sister Rosetta
Tharpe. The music in 1978 more. I think that score is outstanding.
That's true. It's more like a score versus a soundtrack.
Yeah,
sure.
Right? Like 2022 has more of the soundtrack because it's got a lot of the Sister Rosetta Tharpe stuff. So I dug that. So I don't know. I'm stuck. Ben, you want to go on record before me so I can feel?
The only thing I really agreed with the 78 version with is the shooting. Almost everything else I could sort of take away. Whereas I think 2022 shot better. I feel more with it because I feel that sense of justice with it. And everything just feels more polished, obviously, because it's newer and they have, you know, more tools at their disposal. But on a whole, I think it averages
pause,
out.
Though. Ryan, it's not shot on location, right? 2022?
No,
I don't think
it's like all CGI. Basically.
78 is all shot on location. 78's
on location, and then to
and
me
it
that
looks it.
That felt polished.
22, I think, was probably shot in London. Probably.
Yeah. All right, continue, Ben. Sorry.
But tallying that up and adding the racism, I think 2022 is superior.
Okay, we go. I'm actually going to go with my gut, and this is how I felt. Maybe it is because I watched 78 first before 2022, but I'm going to go with 78 because I thought the supporting cast were all dynamic. I was interested. I kind of had figured it out halfway, but really wanted to see where it go. Angela Lansbury slaps. She's so funny in this movie. She dies. Mm-hmm. I die whenever she's on screen. And I liked the innocent aspect of Jackie in it, because that would be what would lead you off the trail even more. And I think that's what's important. So I'll go 78.
It's up to Ryan.
So I didn't care for 2022. Did not like it until maybe like the last 30 minutes. And even then I wasn't terribly interested. And I didn't necessarily enjoy 78. I mean, it's not so much that I enjoyed watching it, but I liked looking at it. Mm. I think that with the cinematography by Jack Cardiff, who's the Powell and Pressburger cinematographer, he's outstanding. So I'm really torn in this because it's between two movies that I'm not exactly enthused about.
Let Emma Mackey sway your heart. Come on. Listen to your heart, Ryan.
I can't.
Follow your crush.
I can't. I gotta go 78. I gotta go 78. I'm sorry.
I didn't expect that from
I'm
all your mustache critiques.
Right now.
All right, then let's get out there.
Let's go tell that very handsome judge.
Mr. Foreman, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. In the case of Death on the Nile versus Death on the Nile, we find in favor of Death on the Nile.
Very well. So shall it be written, so shall it be done. Death on the Nile is superior to Death on the Nile.
To court give a year, adjourned. Ryan.
Always, everybody's a critic.
Mon Dieu! In case you had not heard, the verdict was in favor of 1978, because no one would say it. And now here, Hercule Poirot for the Gabagool Gazette is here with the scoop. Dylan J. Schlender, what do you think of the verdict that they would not read?
Well, Hercule, I just want to say, I want to take this interview time to really thank Jeremy. This is our season premiere. He's been such a great friend of the show. He has great ideas for episodes. And I do want to say, just take a moment, Jeremy did write the book on Poirot, The Importance of Being Poirot. And he very graciously gives Reels of Justice a thank you and the acknowledgments, which I was not expecting when I was reading, preparing for the case. I'm like oh, I'm going to rip Jeremy apart. And then I open it. It's like, thank you, Reels of Justice. And I'm like, oh. You know, so it was really nice. I mean, he's just such an awesome guy. I love having him on the show. And, you know, here's to like 10, 15 more years of however long we'll do this.
I'm still alive. That's very kind.
Ben right, will go before any of us.
Well, first of all, can I thank the judges?
Thank you, but now I will ask Jeremy Black, what did you think of the verdict?
Well, first of all, can I thank the judges? And I think you had a difficult job because I think each of the films has both strengths and weaknesses. And I think one is comparing things that are very difficult to compare. I thought that was a very good point at the very end about the quality of some of the shots, and I thought that was a very interesting one. I think that it was hard for the makers of the 2022 one because they were affected by the possibilities of COVID in terms of shooting abroad. I don't think these days you could safely necessarily shoot a film in Egypt anyway, even without COVID. So I think there are practical problems which we need to all think about. The last one is to just leave listeners with the question that I think both the films are worth listening to. What do you want as listeners? I mean, both the films, the 78 one and the 2022 one, were departures from the text, the 2022 one more than the 78 one, which may be exactly what you'd anticipate. We are an extra 44 years on. But in a sense, what do listeners want? And it's something I puzzle about, and I'm never quite sure of. What I certainly hope is that despite the hostility of much of the criticism, press criticism, I'm not talking about what we've done, the press criticism of Branagh, I hope he presses ahead, because I do think that his introspective, thoughtful Poirot, and not playing it for laughs, is one which I think is quite a lot to offer, and I would be sorry if he gave up after two. So that's what I would like to conclude on. And to say, we usually end this by talking about one or two films we've seen.
Oh, before that, though, I must send it. We have to send it back to the post-trial to do that, because this is the interview, and then they pay me, Hercule Poirot, quite a bit to do this, so let's get back to post-trial for post-trial analysis. Back. Poirot out!
Hey, all right.
All right, bro. Great. Great case. Now, Jeremy, fantastic. You did want to talk about some other movies that you recommended, so let's throw it to you.
Yes, Scapegoat. I don't know if anybody's seen that. 2012, a film made by Charles Sturridge, based on a novel by Daphne du Maurier, one of her lesser known but quite, in a way, troubling novels, in which somebody finds somebody else who looks identical. And in fact, they're both played by the same actor, Matthew Rhys. And one of them is, as it were, swapped over and then discovers he's been brought into a really troubling, murderous environment. I mean, this is a brilliantly scripted and very well acted film. So I'd like to recommend that. And the other two I'd like to recommend, and simply because they've recently done a television serialization of the Ypcris file in Britain, I looked again, I mean, obviously I'd seen them before, at the Michael Caine versions, the films, of both the Ypcris file and Funeral in Berlin. And it was interesting for me because, as it were, what I remembered was that I preferred Funeral in Berlin, but actually seeing them again, I thought the interplay between the main characters was better and the actual shots were better in the Ypcris file. But anyway, that's just some personal reflections.
Schlenzo, you were the other lawyer, so what is your recommendation?
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, I mentioned it at the end of my case, but I'm going to go ahead and recommend it here. The 2018, The ABC Murders, it's a three-part miniseries starring John Malkovich. It is streaming or striming on Amazon Prime. And I like, if we're gonna give Poirot a gritty backstory, I like what they did in this one more than what we saw in Death of the Nile. So it is dark.
Very dark.
So it is dark, but it brings a lot of value into that interpretation of Poirot, especially where it comes to how his views on good and evil are formed. So there's, again, it's not really my favorite, but if you're going to be on a Poirot kick, you got to throw this one into the mix as well. And of course, read the novels and read Jeremy's book about it, because there's a lot of depth with this character. He's very interesting, and I'm very excited that, you know, Kenneth Branagh is working on bringing him back for these modern audiences. I think it's an exciting
Don't call time. It a comeback.
It will be. Big Ben, you are the judge. What's your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend a film starring Agatha Christie's other famed detective, Miss Marple, and recommend 1961's Murder, She Said. My grandmother used to love these movies, and she made us watch all of them over one summer vacation. I think she showed my brother all of them. This character is brilliant. She's an old spinster who reads way too much mystery books, and all of a sudden she's trying to solve an actual murder mystery. So she might be like the spiritual grandmother of true crime podcasters in a way. Murder, She Said, starts off with Miss Marple riding a train where she witnesses a strangulation in a train running parallel to hers. The police don't seem to care, so she takes it upon herself to go walk the tracks and see where the body went, and ends up applying to be a housekeeper to the mansion where she believes the body was taken. I have no idea how well Margaret Rutherford stacks up against the other Miss Marples out there, but for $2.99, you can rent it and form your own opinion. For me, she is delightful.
Nice. Any relation to Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury?
You'll just have to watch and see.
Okay. Ooh. Rye Guy, that's her daughter. What have you got?
My recommendation this week is tied to Death on the Nile star Mia Farrow, who that same year, 1978, made a much better film from a much better director, Robert Altman's A Wedding. This film is true to its title, about a wedding, a rather grand affair uniting two families, one nouveau riche and from the South, the other mobbed up from Chicago. It has all the awesome hallmarks of 70s Altman, the expansive ensemble cast, the roving widescreen cinematography, the satirical approach, the layered overlapping dialogue, and it has a genuinely surprising ending that further proves Altman's standing as a master of the form. A Wedding isn't currently streaming anywhere, nor is it for rent, but it's available on DVD, possibly at your local library.
what is this Ryan, DVD saying you speak
saying
of?
Altman is a better director is like saying Tom Brady is a better football player than me. I mean, come on.
Never heard of this DVD. Is it one of those digital video discs they had back in the day? I guess I'll send us on home. There have been a litany of great detectives throughout fiction. Batman, Ace Ventura, Scooby-Doo. But my recommendation today features a detective who is more silly and offbeat, and that's 2019's Detective Pikachu. Set against the gritty backdrop of Rhyme City, where people and Pokemon live together, a young man in search of his missing father must team up with Super Sleuth Pikachu, a talking electric mouse only he can understand, to unravel his whereabouts. It features Justice Smith, the voice talents of Ryan Reynolds, and the great Bill Nighy in an uncharacteristically villainous role. This is a great family film, especially enjoyable by fans of Ryan Reynolds, as I know Ryan is, and by fans of the Pokemon franchise in general, as I know Jeremy is. The design and CGI execution of the Pokemon is pretty well done, and while the story is fairly simple, it is just a kid's movie after all. So even if the concept sounds far-fetched, if you're seeking a movie for your next family night, why not take a chancy on this one? Bulbasaur. Detective Pikachu is currently available for rent or purchase only, but just be patient because I'm sure it's going to land on streaming before too long.
Should be on HBO Max someday.
It should be.
It's a Warner movie. No,
I feel your pain, Ryan, because I have to be a Ben Affleck fan. So,
yes, that is true. And Jeremy, you said you are a fan of the Pokemons.
Not quite. No, I'm quite happy. No, I think there are limits to my cultural investigation.
All right. Well, you do. Just know you got to catch them all.
He says that 3 years from now, he's going to have a book out about Pokemon.
That would be great.
He's going to run out of stuff to write about.
But with that, we want to thank our guests for joining us. We're all at a show, so we want to thank our guest, Jeremy, for joining us. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure. The very best to all of you.
We'll have you back very soon within this season three now, fellas. So
yeah,
we made it. They said it couldn't be done, but we did it. And with that, we hope everyone else will join us for that new season two as the Reels of Justice keep
new
turning.
Season three. It's the third season.
Yes.
Two as in as well. Count it.
That was my joke. Come
seasons.
On. It was a good joke.
Please follow us on Twitter at Reels of Justice, Instagram Reels of Justice, and Facebook.com/Reels of Justice.